You are listening to The Christian Commute, a commute-length podcast about Christian apologetics, theology, and other matters of Christian interest. Here is your host, Seth Dunn.
It is Thursday, July 22nd, and The Christian Commute is still a show. It's still a thing. It's still a podcast, and here's the episode. I'm sitting at home, so you're not riding with me. I've still been working from home. I think I could probably go back to work now. Just a little update on the family. My wife's second surgery seems to be, healing up like it should. I still got a long ways to go, but she's up and about. I think she can handle the kids. So I could probably go back to work. I was thinking about going back to work tomorrow. But we got the whole COVID Delta variant situation going down, so who knows. But it's very hard. It's very hard to find the time to do a show when I'm working from home, because basically I work right up until 6 or 7 o'clock, and then you spend the rest of the time with my family, so I don't really have that commute time where I'm all alone. So the show has been suffering. But I tell you what, today I've already recorded two-thirds of the show, because I went to lunch. I went to Scott's Walk-Up Barbecue. Today's episode of The Christian Commute brought to you by Scott's Barbecue. And I recorded the inbox question on the way there, and I recorded the show topic on the way back. Today's show topic is the Radical Intensive, David Platt and the Radical Intensive, sort of a follow-up to what we talked about yesterday. So let's get right to today's Bible chapter review. And by the way, so I'm not getting right to it. By the way, don't know when the next show will be. But I thought, hey, I better put one out today. People are starting to wonder where I am. So let's get right to the Bible chapter review. I can't even remember where we left off. I think we left off in Matthew chapter 5, verse 13. So now we are in Matthew chapter 5, verse 14. And here it goes. You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden, nor do people light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on the lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house. Your light must shine before people in such a way that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven. So there's a parallel here with verse 13, because Jesus says, you are the salt of the earth. And then he gives some kind of explanation to that and some kind of consequence. What does it mean that you're the salt of the earth? So he says, you're the salt of the earth, and this is what that means. That's the implications. So now here on verse 14, he's saying, you're the light of the world. And he goes on to say, these are the implications. So this is why I should say, gosh, I'm rusty. I haven't been driving. I haven't been doing the show. This is why you hear Christians say we're trying to be salt and light. Are you salt and light in your family? Are you salt and light in your workplace, et cetera, et cetera? We're salt and light. This is what we say. And people are like, what does that mean? Well, this is what it means. We're salt of the earth, and we explained that in the last show, I think, and the light of the world. So he says a city set on a hill cannot be hidden. So you got to think about cities in that day. Why would the city be set on a hill in case somebody tries to invade it? You don't want to put a city in a valley. It would flood and it would be easy to invade. But a city on a hill, you got to understand it's got walls. It's on the high ground. You know, they can shoot bows and arrows down at you if you try to evade. But you can't hide that city. You look out, you're walking in the countryside, bang, there's that city on a hill. And what the city's lit up, there's going to be torches and stuff in the city. It's even like that now. If you're out in the country, you don't see any lights. But the closer you get to the city, you see the lights of the city. For those of you around here, it's like you're driving to Atlanta at nighttime. When you get into the city, you see the lights on those big buildings. So a city set on a hill cannot be hidden. It's on the hill on purpose. It's to lighten things up. Nor do people light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand, and it gives light to all those who are in the house. So, now in modern times, we have electricity in the ceiling, so we have light fixtures. There's a lamp in this room, by the way. I'm sitting in my daughter's bedroom. So her lamp is sitting on her nightstand. Why is it there? So it can shine and we can see it. We don't put the lamp in the closet. That didn't make any sense. And that's the same thing Jesus is saying. When people are in their house and they want to give light to the house, they put it on the lampstand so everybody can see it. They don't hide it. So this it kind of sounds silly, but Jesus is using this to make an argument. Your light must shine before people in such a way that they might see your good works. It's kind of like being salty on the earth and being that preserving agent. Like you taste it a little different than the world. Your light must shine before people in such a way that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven. So listen to this. Your good works do not glorify you. And the good things you do in the name of Christ, people notice that and then they say, this guy, why is he doing it? Oh, it glorifies the Father in heaven. So we're supposed to lead lives that glorify God. Being a Christian is not a thing like it's our secret, like it's our personal private religion. We don't talk about that. You should always be willing to talk about your beliefs, to talk about how Jesus is your Lord, to talk about how God in heaven is your Father, and why you do what you do. Now, you don't want to be out that. I think we'll get out there, and we'll get to this in Matthew 6, doing good works so that people see you, like praying on the street, look at me, giving money away to people. Look at how much money I'm giving away. Why? Because it glorifies you. But your lifestyle should be one that's a holy lifestyle, that's a righteous lifestyle. Well, what's that look like? Look at the Beatitudes. And people see how you're different, the salt, you're different. People see how you're different and how you're doing good works. And they say, all right, that's his everyday lifestyle. That glorifies the Father. This is not something we hide and like, oh, we're going to keep this a secret. Christianity is not a secret society. It's an out, open religion. We want to show everybody the love of the Father and the righteousness and glory of the Father through what we do. Part of that is sharing the gospel. But also another part of that is holy living. And with that, I'll end the Bible chapter review and splice the rest of the show together.
All right, this question comes from Lacey in Missouri. It's about the influence of Freemasonry. She says, the influence of Freemasonry is very low in my area of Missouri, but we do have quite a few Elks lodges. Is that a part of Freemasonry? And the answer is no, the Elks are not a part of Freemasonry. So there are lots of brotherhoods and social clubs and the like, things very similar to Freemasonry out there. One that comes to mind is the Odd Fellows. So the Odd Fellows is an organization similar to Freemasonry in that they have little clubs that you have to join and they get together. And then more people have probably heard of the Elks Lodge. And if I remember, I think they had something like the Elks Lodge on the Flintstones that Barney and Fred Barney were a part of. But just to answer your question, no, the Elks are not a part of Freemasonry. They are the Elks. And the reason I focus on Freemasonry and not, say, the Elks or the Odd Fellows, is because Freemasonry is inherently religious. It's not just a brotherhood. It's not just a social club. It's not just a charity organization or a service organization. And it is a service organization because they serve their communities, much like the Kiwanis is a service organization. And I think the Key Club is a service organization. Guys, this is America. We have a million service organizations and brotherhoods out there. This is a free country. When you have a free country with free association, you're going to get all kinds of little clubs and stuff like this. And that's good if people are out there doing charity and people are out there getting together with their friends. But Masonry is different because of the religious nature of Masonry, as I've said before. Now, I'm not going to go into that because I've done that on so many different shows. Right. So that's why you might see the focus on this show about Masonry and nothing about the Elks. I don't really know that much about the Elks. And I think there's Moose, too. Have you heard of the Loyal Order of Moose? I think we have a Moose Lodge here in Cartersville. But the Elks Lodge, I don't know about their rules, what allows you to join, who's allowed to be a member, and what do they do. I imagine, like many other fraternities and social clubs out there, that they have a building with some pool tables and some beers. And they get together with their friends and they have a few beers and they shoot pool. You know, maybe they have a charity golf tournament. I really have no idea. I think there's a golf course in Calhoun, Georgia, and I've played on it, I want to say, one of the two times I've played golf that's associated with the Elks. So I don't know what they do. If anybody knows if they're doing religious things, I don't, you know, you can tell me. But just to shortly answer your question, Lacey, the Elks is a separate organization from Freemasonry. So that's the answer to your question. I don't know about the Elks hierarchy. I will explain once again the hierarchy of the Masonic Lodge. It's a little bit like a Baptist church in that the lodges are independent lodges under the jurisdiction of the Grand Lodge of the state that they're in. So here in Bartow County, we have five lodges. There's the Cartersville Lodge, it's number 63, but there's also the Taylorsville Lodge, the Emerson Lodge, and the Stilesboro Lodge. The name of the fifth one slips my mind right now. Emerson, Taylorsville, Stilesboro, Cartersville. There's another one, but I can't remember the name of it. I'm slipping. But all of those lodges, they govern themselves and they operate in and of themselves. They elect their own officers. In other words, what the Emerson Lodge does has no bearing on what the Cartersville Lodge does. But they do recognize one another as in, say, friendly cooperation, if you will. But they're under the governance, and this is where they're not like a Baptist church, they're under the governance of the Grand Lodge of Georgia. Now, in Tennessee, there are lodges too. And they're under the governance of the Grand Lodge of Tennessee. But if Tennessee makes a rule, Georgia doesn't have to follow that, because that's Tennessee's rule. And what you're seeing now in Masonry, and I know this is kind of going beyond your question, Lacey, what you're seeing now in Masonry is some states don't want to associate with other states. Here in the Bible Belt, in the more conservative areas, you're not allowed to be a homosexual and be a Mason. But say in more liberal parts of America, like New Mexico, they'll let a homosexual man into the lodge. Well, the Georgia people don't want to have anything to do with the New Mexico people then. Well, so, oh, you're Freemasons, and you're accepting homosexuality? That's against our rules. Remember, Masonry is a very old organization, so they have very old rules when it comes to societal structure. You're not even supposed to shack up with your girlfriend. I knew a Freemason who was living with his girlfriend before they got married. And that would have been, he should have had arguably a Masonic trial about that, being shacked up before he married his girlfriend. And even in Georgia, you have the Atlanta Lodge, which is going to be more progressive than the rest of the lodges. I think their lodge is called Gate City Lodge, but don't quote me on that. So that's the governance of Freemasonry, and that's how they relate to all the other Masonic lodges. And what does not follow under that, Lacey, are the Elks, are the Moose, or the Moose. They don't follow under, or the Oddfellows. And I don't know what the societal influence is of the Elks in a given place. You know, historically speaking, there's been companies like I've heard about, say, Lockheed Martin, for example, in Atlanta, where if you wanted to advance there, you should be a Mason. You know, that helps you in the community. Like I talk about in Bartow County, in our public services departments, a lot of our policemen and firemen are Masons. So if you want to advance in, say, the fire department in the city or county, or you want to be a magistrate judge, it would help you socially to be a Mason. Now, the Masons will tell you, like, no, we don't do politics. Well, you could say that. But look at the fire department. And I imagine, I never asked him this, I imagine that's why my paternal grandfather was a Mason, because he was a fireman. And he retired from the fire department. He was like a fireman, you know, the regular guy who would go spray the flames and rescue people. But at the end of his career, he had risen to be the fire inspector. And if you want to rise up in these organizations, in these, especially in small towns and political situations or within a company, sometimes it helps to be a Mason. My granddad actually eventually quit the lodge. I've talked about that before, in short. But that's the answer to your question, Lacey, and thanks for writing in another question about the Masons and the first question I've ever had about the Elks. All right, so let's talk about the Radical Intensive, not to be confused with the Replicate Collective. So this is something David Platt is offering. Now, here's a quick update. After our last show, recall from our last show, I said, hey, Robbie Gallaty is expecting people to come pay him and his friends like Kerry Newhoff and David Platt to learn how to run their churches better. And I pointed out that there was this huge controversy at McLean Bible Church where David Platt is the pastor. I pointed this out. Hold on. There's some minivan sitting here. All right, doofus. Oh. Sorry. I pulled up trying to turn left on a street, and a guy pulls up across from me, and he has the right of way, and he's just sitting there. And then he just looks down from his wheel. So, I don't know, I can't get anywhere. No matter where if I'm on I-75 or on the side streets of Cartersville, I always find the people who can't drive. Maybe they're more frustrating because I'm trying to think about what I'm saying while they can't drive. Oh, by the way, I have sweet tea, so hold on. Yes, I lost my train of thought. McLean Bible Church, David Platt's the pastor, and I told you about the controversy that's going on there. Well, since that time, McLean Bible Church has actually been sued by its members. I guess that's the church suing itself. Maybe I'll talk about that at the end of this segment. But let's get back to the Radical Intensive. Remember, on the last episode, I said, guys, who wants to go pay this money to be trained like one of these real estate salesmen to go hear the Vision Caster? You're going to pay this guy $200 a month for coaching, and David Platt's in on it. Well, David Platt has his own little thing, and it's the Radical Intensive. All right, guys, so you can sign up to go in September, from September 27th to September 28th, at McLean Bible Church in Virginia, and the cost is $295 per person. Well, $295 for the first person and $195 for the second person. And I think that's because some people don't like to go off without their wives. So they're like, all right, the pastor or the elder or whoever the church leader is that's coming to this conference can come for $300. And, well, we don't want him to have to sit there alone. So we'll give a deal to his wife. And who is this conference for, this Radical Intensive Conference, all right? Well, it's for lead pastors and senior leaders at churches. Here's why. So they can gain a vision for how to shift the idea of existing mission fields to mission forces, mobilizing your current reached world mission partners to the unreached. And I think what that's trying to say is how you can refocus your mission dollars and your mission at your local church maybe away from people who are already what you would call a reached people group to an unreached people group. So think of third world people who don't really have a lot of biblical influence or Christian influence where they live. So let me get this straight. Let's understand. You're going to pay David Platt $300, and I think this includes your lunches. By the way, it's not just $300, it's the cost to travel to Virginia, and then the cost of your hotel room. They got a block of rooms, it's $130 a night. So not just the cost of the conference. You're paying David Platt, you're paying him $295, but then you have to spend money on travel and accommodation too. And I want to make this clear, because this is not uncommon among mega pastors. This is David Platt's thing. Radical is his thing. It does not belong to McLean Bible Church. It belongs to David Platt. But you're going to David Platt's church building. Now, I don't know if McLean Bible Church gets a cut or not, let's say of like rent or facility usage fee. I have no idea. But this is David Platt's side business. No, wait, Seth. It's about missions. No, it's David Platt's side business. Now, let's put this into perspective before we even talk about what you're supposedly being trained for. David Platt has a side business where people are going to come learn how to do something from him. Is this the guy, once again, that you want to be learning this from? His own church is suing itself. His house is not in order. And I'm not saying who's right or who's wrong. Because he took over at a church. Is there a detour? What's going on here? There is a detour. Oh, come on. How am I supposed to get home? He took over at a church for a pastor who had been there since the church's founding. His name was Lon Solomon. He was there for 30 years. And he basically, or the church, I should say, I never like to say a guy did it. But the church grew from basically a house church with a, you know, or a church in a little building with a handful of people to a 10,000 member church. Now, once you have a 10,000 member church, there's no way you have a healthy church. Give me a break on these 10,000 member churches. But obviously, these people were Lon Solomon people who grew to this 10,000 member church. And now David Platt has to take over. It's like, I don't envy that guy. It's like the guy who took over for Bobby Bowden. Now, that was Jimbo Fisher, and he won a national championship. But you don't want to be the guy, Ray Perkins, who takes over for Bear Bryant, right? Who you don't want to be the guy who took over for Philip Fulmer. By the way, Philip Fulmer is nowhere near the stratosphere of Bobby Bowden and Bear Bryant. But I think that was Lane Kiffin and then Derek Dooley and then Butch Jones and now... is it Josh Heupel? Things aren't looking good in Knoxville. Maybe I'm just sticking it to the Tennessee fans. But if somebody's like a legend and super successful, you don't want to be their immediate successor. You want to be the successor of their immediate successor. So it's not like David Platt had an easy time on his hands. I don't want to downplay that at all. But when it comes down to it, this is a guy whose church is suing itself who wants to charge you $300. Or really, he didn't want to charge you. He wants to charge your senior leader, your senior pastor. He wants to charge your senior pastor $300 so he can tell them how to rework their missions budget and their missions initiatives. And one of the reasons his church is in such turmoil is because when David Platt started there, all of a sudden, after David Platt started there, all of a sudden the church starts partnering with the Southern Baptists and the North American Mission Board for their church plant and mission outreach. And that's got the members up in arms. So sorry, David Platt, your missions strategy change and the people you're partnering with is so controversial that your own church is suing itself. And, you know, Paul is up in heaven yelling, why not rather be wronged, perhaps, that your church is suing itself. And you're going to charge 300 people to tell them how they need to do their missions and your radical intensive? No, I'm sorry. David Platt has a brand called Radical that people think is cool, and he's going to capitalize on it by charging suckers $300. And here's the problem. These suckers are in charge of local churches. What P.T. Barnum, is he the guy who said there's a sucker born every minute? There's a sucker born every minute, and some of them are running your local church. I'm going to repeat that. There's a sucker born every minute, and some of them are running your local church. And this is what's funny. Like, so David Platt is the circus man in this example. He's Barnum. He's selling circus tickets to suckers. But now he's like, no, I'm not just going to like have suckers in my church. I'm going to find pastors who were suckers and sucker them in too. You don't know David Platt, Seth. You shouldn't talk about him like that. Hey, I'm not the guy charging $300 to come hear me talk about, this is how we need to do missions. Let me point this out too. Probably the most prominent foreign mission organization in the world for the last 100 years. I argue about what success is, but let's say most prominent, successful, well-funded, like the missions organization, the New England Patriots of foreign missions. How about that? The New England Patriots of foreign missions, the New York Yankees of foreign missions. It's the International Mission Board, y'all, of the Southern Baptist Convention. David Platt was president of the International Mission Board, and he washed out, basically. That's like the biggest Southern Baptist job ever. David Platt was Mr. Successful Southern Baptist. He got the job, and then he resigned. I don't think he lasted 3 years. Now, maybe he should have resigned. Maybe the organization has run terribly, and he was like, oh, there's no fixing this. He was there, I wasn't. He knows, I don't. And I've certainly been the one to come on this show and say Star of Lottie Moon, so I'm not trying to talk out of both sides of my mouth. Because we know a double-minded man is unstable in all his ways. But why would anybody want to pay $300 to listen to a guy who was the president of the International Mission Board and then had to quit? Maybe you're not the big missions expert you say. If you're such a great missions expert, why didn't you turn the mission board around with all your expertise, dude? Maybe you're not a big missions expert. Maybe you're a really charismatic speaker and you can get people to come give you $300. And here's another thing. If you're a local church leader or just a local church member, don't you know your missions needs better than somebody else in another state, in another city, somewhere? Like, why do you have to go listen to David Platt tell you about missions? And number one, one of the things about this conference, and you can look it up, it's like how to cast a vision for your people and get them to care about missions. What's wrong with your church if it doesn't care about missions? Like, I'm sorry, I've never been there. I've never been to the church that doesn't care about missions. I've never been to one. I have, listen, I'm a Baptist. We're people of the book. We're evangelistic. Maybe there's some mainliner somewhere. I don't know. But I haven't been to the first church that doesn't spend a significant amount of time and money on giving money to missionaries and sharing the gospel and giving people food. I've never in my life been a part of a church like that. Now, perhaps the David Platt radical argument is, Your church has a $50,000 sound system that could support two foreign missionaries. You say you're missional, but you're not if you have a $50,000 sound system instead of you giving $50,000 to missions. And that's an argument that I would agree with. That kind of thing. But can't we figure this out on our own? We have to pay $300 to go hear the guru? So here's the thing. If your local leaders are spending, it's probably $700. I mean, let's say the conference is $300. We'll say one guy's going, just one. The conference is $300. They got another $150 in for one night a hotel, so $300, $450, and another $300 to travel, $750, $50. You're spending $800, $800 to $1,000 on this conference. If you've got a guy who wants to drop a grand to go hear David Platt weep from the pulpit about missions imbalances, you got a problem. I want to go hear about our problems from the guy who has his worst problems. No, you got a problem. You got to clamp down, local church member who's donating to support your local church. You need to clamp down on all this conference stuff, all these trips for the leaders. Are they really spending your money responsibly? And do they really need to hear from this guy about missions? I mean, I went to seminary. I'm David Platt's seminary, for that matter. Now I got to go pay $300 to hear David Platt tell me more about missions? I don't know how to run my own church? It's ridiculous. It's crazy. Thanks for listening to The Christian Commute. Lord willing, I'll be back with you again soon. Don't know when. As always, God bless. And as always, remember, Christianity is not about getting saved. It's about being saved.
Thanks for listening to The Christian Commute. Please send your questions about Christian apologetics and theology to sethdunn88@gmail.com. If you are not a Christian, please remember that you can be reconciled to God through the shed blood of His Son, Jesus Christ. The Bible teaches that all who call on the name of the Lord will be saved. Repent of your sins now and accept Jesus as Lord. God bless.